Okay, we will call the House Health Committee together for April 29th, 2011, and we are now open for business. My only question is why so many of you are here when it's sunny outside.
Oh, and so few of us are here. Yeah.
We have to be here. You don't. So
there'll be more of us anyway, here before we're done.
We'll show more appreciation for you as we move along, I'm sure. We'll start today by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 454A. And our valuable assistant clue us in.
Right, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 454A comes to you off the Senate floor with 28 ayes, 2 excused. The bill exempts certain practitioners from regulation by the Oregon Board of Massage Therapists, requires that applicants for an initial license as a massage therapist to obtain approval from the board after the board performs a credentialing review to determine applicants' proficiency in massage therapy. It also authorizes the board to adopt rules establishing required contact hours of classes in subjects including anatomy, physiology, kinesiology, and pathology. There's no revenue impact on the bill. There is a fiscal impact statement, but in the statement it articulates that the expenditure to the board is minimal. And they give you further explanation, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
And at the request of Co-Chair Greenlick, he wanted to have legislative counsel here, so Marisa James is here. If we want to start off with that first, Mr. Co-Chair?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just clarify that part first, and then...
Hi there.
Hi there. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Okay, so go ahead. Marisa, do you have the bill with you?
Yes, I do. And it's Marisa James. I'm from Legislative Council, like Sandy just said.
There are those things on page 2, starting in line 9,
mm-hmm.
that talk about practitioners who don't have to be covered by the board. I'm having a little trouble with the ands or the ors. There are, there's A, B, C, D, right?
Yes. So,
and
go ahead.
Is it any of those, or all of them, or some of them, or what is it that exempts them?
All right, so you've got co-chairs Thompson and Greenlick. So you've got practitioners who, first you've got people who don't claim expressly or implicitly to be massage therapists. Mm-hmm. It's going to be or at the
So let's stop there. If somebody just doesn't claim to be a massage therapist, they can do all the massage therapy they want?
No, it's going to be an and. I reverse myself. So, yeah, so this is one big group of people. You have to not claim to be a massage therapist, limit your work to one of these things that's like that's not really rubbing the person, I think, is the idea. You have to be certified by a professional organization that has certain requirements, and you have to provide the contact information for that organization.
It's the end that comes just before D that controls them all.
Yes. I can see why you're confused, though.
Yeah, because there are some ors in there as well. I was losing track of it. Good. That was my question.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay, we will have 4 people today. Let's call Kathy Calise and Ann Walters, Petiti Fullerton, and would you please start by stating your name for the record?
Co-Chair Thompson, members of the House Health Care Committee. For the record, I am Kathy Calise, Board Chair of the Oregon Board of Massage Therapists. The primary mission of the Oregon Board of Massage Therapists is to protect the public by regulating the practice of massage. Traditionally, we have performed this task by having statutes and administrative rules governing the scope of practice and the behavior of the therapist. In addition, we have our compliance section perform investigations and issue citations for those who are out of compliance. This bill will continue to provide protection to Oregonians as it requires a practitioner who is seeking exemption to be certified by an organization that contains both educational requirements and a disciplinary process. In essence, the professional organizations duplicate what the board requires. In many cases, the practitioners are paying a fee to the organization and a fee for licensure. During these difficult economic times, it is costly for practitioners to pay fees for continuing education requirements and membership and licensure for both the professional organization and the board. Due to the fact that these organizations require both educational standards and a disciplinary process, we do not believe allowing an exemption would compromise our primary mission of protecting the public. I would also like to point out that the board has removed the educational requirement of a hydrotherapy class. We have removed this requirement to allow the Rolfers and the structural integrationists to immediately apply for licensure upon completion of their education. Several of the Ralph structural integration schools do not require a hydrotherapy class, as these types of body workers do not utilize hydrotherapy techniques in their scope of practice. Upon the passage of this bill, the board will then modify Oregon Administrative Rule Chapter 334 and require those practitioners who utilize hydrotherapy in their practice to receive hydrotherapy training. This will ensure that the practitioners are appropriately trained for what they practice and not place an impediment to licensure on those who do not utilize hydrotherapy. This bill will also contain a credentialing review that would allow Oregon Board of Massage Therapists to review the education and experience of an applicant and determine their proficiency in the field of massage therapy. This language allows for some flexibility of the licensing requirements. We have experienced applicants coming from other states and countries who have practiced for several years and are required to receive additional schooling in order to qualify for licensure. The board's desire is to ensure that only qualified practitioners practice massage within the state of Oregon, and also balance the amount of time that it takes for qualified practitioners to enter the marketplace within Oregon. These credentialing reviews, the credentialing review would allow experienced practitioners to enter the workplace in Oregon much quicker than they currently do. During the March 2011 board meeting, the board voted unanimously to support Senate Bill 454A. We have collaboratively worked with other stakeholders and believe we have made provisions to the bill that would not only benefit the massage and bodywork community, but also the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Good afternoon to all of you committee members. I really appreciate this opportunity. This bill, from my point of view, SB 454A, has been a 30-year...
Can you give us your name?
Ann Waters.
Thank you.
Forgive me.
That's a part of it. I do it all the time.
All right. Now, this is more important than my name, is what it boils down to. This has been a bill, from my point of view, that's been 30 years coming. I've been here in Oregon since 1985 practicing polarity therapy as well as massage therapy. And polarity therapy is an energetic form of somatic practice. In other words, we basically do acupuncture without needles. And so it's an Ayurvedic form. It's holistic in its base. Now, the purpose of the bill is to create more access for people that have illnesses so they can choose their providers and go to someone they really want to go to. I've had 100 people in the last 5 years call me saying they will not move to Oregon because they want to be taught polarity therapy, and I am a teacher of polarity therapy. I'm a senior teacher with APTA. And so they leave the state where they can practice. There are 18 other states in the country where we are not under the massage statutes and we practice on our own. So this bill is fantastic from that point of view. The other thing is, if I can teach people and more people come to do polarity therapy, there will be jobs created, taxpayers will pay their taxes, and we will do what I know Oregon is desperately wanting to do this session and always, is to create jobs. Plus, at the same time, we may be able to relieve some pain in the community through creating more access for people to get this kind of health care. Polarity is one of the modalities that is being exempted, Feldenkrais and also Bowen work. They're both very different from massage. And so I am highly, I hope you support this. I know the Senate was very happy about it, and I'm very happy to be here and give a little bit of a push to the bill, and hopefully, thank you.
Thank you. You state your name first.
My name is Pratiti Fullerton, Representative Thompson and committee members. Thank you for hearing my testimony. I have similar story to Anne's. I've only been here for 5 years, but I am a licensed massage therapist and also a bone work practitioner and instructor. I work for the Bone Work Academy of Australia, which is national, provides certification on a national level for its practitioners and also has international standards, is tied to the international school. So every practitioner is certified and trained the same way, and we do extensive assessment to make sure practitioners have the skills and are competent before we let them call themselves a practitioner. When I came to Oregon, I needed to get a massage license in order to practice bone work, and I was lucky enough to be able to do that. It was costly and time-consuming. Not everybody can do that, and I want to create more access for people to be able to do this work. I've had several people, as Anne said, who have contacted me about learning it, but they cannot afford to go to massage school because either they don't have the money, the time, or they're physically unable. So we want to create access. We only have 17 bone work practitioners in this state, and it's a very beneficial service that people are having limited access to right now, and a lot of times people who cannot get other types of body work or touch therapy can have this kind of work because it's so gentle and non-invasive. So this is about creating access and updating the massage statutes so that they come into line with the way the reality is in the health care field today, which is a lot of different complementary therapies that are not all the same thing. Thank you for hearing my testimony, and I'm here for questions if you have any.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? Just a clarification. You might understand then, under this bill, you would not call yourself a massage therapist, or you might not, but you would be able to call yourself a bone work therapist.
Exactly. If I am not licensed as a massage therapist, I would not call myself a massage therapist.
Okay. So. Thank you. Fine. Thank you. Anyone else?
You can just sell too. Is that?
Yeah. So would you be licensed under the Board of Massage Therapy, or would you have a license under whom?
I have a license in massage, and I also am licensed or certified to the American Palliative Therapy Association. I pay two fees. Mm-hmm.
But under this, excuse me, I guess I'm trying to understand, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with some of this. I guess I'm trying to understand, so let's suppose that you practice polarity therapy. Under this bill, would you need to be licensed in the state of Oregon to do that?
To do polarity therapy?
Mm-hmm.
I am.
No, but if I could take that question. Again, I'm Kathy Calista, board chair. No, they would not need to. They would not be licensed by the Oregon Board of Massage Therapists. They would be exempt from that licensure. So
they'd either be certified or licensed by something else.
They would be. They would be certified by their professional organization. Yes.
But there would be no state acknowledgement, one thing or the other.
Yeah. Well, the thing about this bill is that we are tied in for safety still with the Board of Massage Therapists. It's like we have an opportunity to not only practice what we do, but if someone goes awry, for instance, someone practices polarity and they are not certified by the American Polarity Therapy Association, our ethics people will go after them, I would go after them, and also we could bring the case to the board. And they would also help us. We are tied together in that way. So that's where the protection
continues through the Oregon Board of Massage Therapists to support us in what we're doing. We're still smaller organizations, so we agreed on this. We're working together on this, which is really positive. It's the first time I can remember we're working together, and I'm very happy about it. So from a legal point of view, we're covered. Is that correct,
Kathy? I'll go ahead.
This is Petiti
Fullerton again, yes. For the record. I wanted to add that I believe the way it's going to be written in rules is that the Board of Massage Therapists is the agency that is going to decide which professional organizations qualify and do that determination. So if they determine that one of these professional organizations do not have the standards that are sufficient, then they would not qualify for those exemptions. And I'll let Kathy.
If you would look at the bill and you look at, I'm sorry, this is Kathy Kalis again, Board Chair. D, subsection 2, the State Board of Massage Therapists has the authority to verify that a practitioner claiming to be exempt from application of ORS 687.011, under subsection 1J of this section is certified. So anyway, bottom line is that the board will have the authority to go and to verify that their practitioner is indeed part of this credentialing profession, so that we will have a limited amount of oversight as to who's, as to that, well, not limited. We will have oversight. Is that making any sense? Is that?
Well, I think it is, and I'm sorry, I was having trouble finding your reference.
On page 2.
Okay.
Under the D.
What line?
Line 22. Actually, and it's really line 24 where it starts, subsection 2 of D.
I see.
Representative Greenleaf.
Yeah, I'd like to follow on that. I don't think this does give you that.
Is this a different bill?
We're in the same bill you're in.
No. It says we have the authority to verify that a practitioner claiming to be exempt.
Go ahead.
Under ORS, this section is certified by a professional organization and credentialing agency as required by subsection.
That's all you have.
That's all we have. That's all we need to have. Because they're going to be exempt. We just need to verify that they are part of a professional organization. Because the other piece to this is that this bill, we're asking that the professional organization maintains disciplinary procedures to ensure adherence to requirements of the organization or the agency. So we've put some stipulations on what that professional organization does for their practitioners.
And somebody is not certified, or the certification is not, where you get the funds to investigate that?
Where do we get the funds to investigate that? Well, it'll be a process that they will have to, again, it's an investigation. It goes along with our compliance and investigation. But right now there's only 17 bone work practitioners in the state of Oregon. The amount of practitioners at this point that are practicing these practices is minimal to the 7,000 that practice massage in the state of Oregon.
Let me add one piece. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Our board, for instance, the Polarity Therapy Board, we have an education director. We have an ethics director. We have a president. We have a legislative liaison. If someone was not doing what they were supposed to be doing as a Polarity practitioner, or they weren't a Polarity practitioner and saying they weren't, we would also prosecute. We would bring our funds to bear and our people to bear. It's not like massage. The OBMT would be alone in this.
You would prosecute under what legal authority is that?
Excuse me?
The prosecution. What legal authority do you have to prosecute?
Well,
the Polarity Association?
We would work together on that piece, and also, but our monies would also be included if it was a big problem. We've never had any problems, so I mean, I'm not really concerned at this point. Now, if the numbers grew to the level that massage has grown. There may be some problems, but we screen people. People are drawn to this work. It's a different kind of person that's drawn to this kind of work. Does this help you, though, in understanding how they would merge so it wouldn't be a large expense?
No, it doesn't, but it's okay.
It doesn't.
Any other questions for this panel? Representative
Well, we
Whitener.
Want to answer this question, whatever this...
Well,
you don't have any authority to do anything.
No, the...
As a polarity commission. I mean, you have no authority, and that's okay.
Yeah.
They
but,
have authority.
But we have the authority.
Here's a second to make sure they have the authority.
They have the authority.
We have the authority.
That's awesome.
And they have the money. It's kind of like the relationship I have with my wife.
She has the authority and you have the money, or is it the other way around?
She has both, but...
He has the authority.
Thank you.
Just real quick, because, I mean, I'm not a big massage person. I get tense when I have a massage. My wife and I did one time, but I want to know what we're getting worked up about here.
I don't want to know about that.
What is a polarity massage, or polarity?
What is it?
Yes.
I gave you a little handout for that. Polarity works with energetic meridians. Okay, there's five energetic meridians in the body. There's three energetic principles. It's like acupuncture, but it's from India. It's holistic in its form. It works with your food, works with your body, works with your mind, works with your emotions. And originally it came from India. Ayurveda medicine is practiced there and practiced in many parts of the country. But the teacher that started this form of Ayurveda, his name is Dr. Randolph Stone. He was a chiropractor, an osteopath, an honorary doctor. He was a naturopath. He was quite a mentor for all of us, and he has now passed away, 1983 passed away. All right, so we use point work when we work on the body. It's gentle. It's non-invasive, and it works like our hands are like battery cables. All right, it connects the energy flows that are within the body. Now, this may sound, it's subtle, okay? It's subtle, but it's very effective. You have to work with the entire person in order to bring the effect about. Does that help you?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to... Ask Feldenkrais next?
No, I'm just...
Come and have a session.
If somebody doesn't like it, they don't go back.
That's right.
So, I mean, I don't see punishment ever happening or anything. I go in and I don't like the way you do something, I don't go back. I mean,
that's right.
We're not mandating that insurance covers this or anything else. Okay. Good pill, let's get it out of here.
Looks like we have
brain surgery, too.
Yeah.
Either it works or it doesn't.
I work with people with bad
habits.
Good question.
Go ahead, Bill.
I guess I want to go back to the board.
Okay.
You know, maybe I need more sleep today or something, but I'm not getting this. It would appear to me that what you're doing is you're allowing people to not need to be licensed to do whatever they wish to do. And if you're allowing that, then how would you have authority over their misconduct? I thought that was the question that Co-Chair Greenluck asked.
They are not going to be licensed.
Yeah, and so they're free.
So
really, the only restraints they have are the restraints that their organization and they personally choose to give them. Or in other words, they have no protection from the state.
The practitioners that are going to be practicing these practices?
The public who is going to be using these practitioners.
These particular practices that are asking for exemption are I want to say less invasive, but that invasive, but that's not a good terminology to use. They're performed closed. While they're powerful practices, people aren't likely to get hurt doing this treatment.
Can I help you?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Thank you.
Our particular organization has the power to prosecute if we want. If I found someone not doing what they were supposed to do, I would report them immediately. I'll be one of the people that will be kind of watchdogging polarity therapists here in the state. I represent APTA
here in the state. I'm a senior teacher.
And you would report them to whom?
The board of
massage therapists. To the board.
But they don't have any authority if they're licensed
under you.
Yes, they do.
We're tied into
but,
the law.
But we still... But part of what you're, I think the confusion is that we could get them for unlicensed practice if they're not associated with the professional organization that's done the credentialing.
That's exactly right.
So just anyone couldn't go
on
and
hang out.
Or
some other profession.
Or some other profession, yes. We could get them from a licensed practice.
Not if they do misconduct, only if they're not certified.
Well.
You have no authority over their misconduct if they're certified.
That's
by them
through Representative Greenlink, right?
Yeah. Representative Doherty, you've been awfully quiet.
I think you're confusing us, and the reason is that what you do is you're saying that these groups are exempted from the Oregon Massage Therapy Board.
License.
Okay, licensure board.
Yes.
So I think the question is then why are we talking about it?
Well, we have to exempt them with this bill.
Well, because we're not
massage therapists. But I mean, put your exemption. So I think
gone.
What we're doing is we're going a little further. It's the idea of these people would be exempt from the licensure board.
Right.
And so whatever you do with your own organization, the state of Oregon under the licensure board is not concerned about that because you're exempt from them. Is that pretty much what it is?
No. Well, they are concerned about it.
Well, no, the way that this law reads, we have no power over you whatsoever unless you are a licensed massage therapist, and then we will deal with it on that. So I think, ma'am, what you're doing is you're confusing us. Wait, just let me finish. You're confusing us in the sense that I think you're trying to make the point that the state of Oregon does have some say in what you do, and the way I read this bill, we don't. This is really, really, you're really confusing us.
I understand.
Okay. What it is, she is exempt from the licensure board, correct?
Right, she would be exempt from being licensed, yes.
Then that's what it is. And so if she does something in her own organization that is unethical, she can go to her organization, and since she is exempt from the licensure board, you don't have to deal with that.
That is correct,
okay.
And that is why the piece is they have to have a disciplinary process in order to be exempt. That organization and has to have a disciplinary process.
If they don't have an organization that has a disciplinary process,
then they won't be exempt.
Then they'll be under the licensure board.
That's exactly.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Representative Widener, you one last, and we're out of here.
I'm just overwhelmed with information right now.
Well, thank you, ladies.
Okay,
and we have one
you.
More person, Deborah Skell. It's your responsibility to straighten us all out.
Bring us home.
I'm your man.
No pressure here.
Good. Co-chairs, members of the committee, I want to thank you for having me here today and giving me the opportunity to sort this all out. I hope I'm up to it. My name is Deborah Skell. I'm a Feldenkrais practitioner. And I think what I want to do is back up for a moment and tell you how I first had an experience with the somatic method, which all of these practices that are potentially to be exempted are somatic methods.
What does that mean?
Somatic is instead of thinking, it's feeling and sensing.
Okay. Somatic from body.
Pardon?
From body, somatic.
Yes. Yes.
Similar to our relationship, Mitch.
Ours is psychosomatic.
So I have 3 hip replacements, the same hip, over a period of 20 plus years. After my third replacement, I could not walk without a cane for 9 months, in spite of the fact that I was a traditional physical therapy, going 8 and 9 hours a week. I finally said something to my physical therapist, and he suggested that I have a Feldenkrais lesson. I went to someone. I had 3 lessons in 10 days, put the stick down, and walked away. I said, whoa, something different. And it is, in fact, a very, very different discipline. It is not massage. The current statute was written in 1955. It was broadly written, and it was appropriate for the time. These therapeutic modalities have come up since. They are not effectively governed or managed by the massage board. We're asking them to do something that they're not equipped to do. They've got other tasks that are appropriate to them. all of the agencies, all of the methods here are credentialed, training is mandated, education is mandated, and we have grievance process. Feldenkrais has, it's an international guild, and we have a domestic guild, which is actually located here in Portland, Oregon. We do not fit into the massage board's world. So for that reason, we are looking for this exemption. I would like to, rather than go ahead with what I prepared, which is pretty clear, it's a bullet pointed and it will be circulated to you, I would like to field any questions that you might have. If there's anything I can clarify on this, I would really welcome that opportunity.
Do you have any questions from the board? Yes, sir.
I guess, what do you class, I mean, you talked about somatic.
Mm-hmm.
I guess somatic therapy? What's the name of the kind of thing you're doing? Is it massage?
No.
Somatic interventions? I mean, what do you call it? I mean, I'm a psychologist,
okay.
You know? That's a profession. We do certain kinds of things, and I'm having a hard time understanding are you medical treatment? Are you massage therapists? Are you acupuncturist variants? I'm just really very, I'm sorry to be so dense, but this is not clear to me at all.
I appreciate that, and somatic is very difficult to talk about because it's feeling and sensing as opposed to thinking about and talking about. So it is challenging. Somatic is helping. What I do is give a lesson to someone. I don't do a treatment. I give someone a lesson in which I make skeletal or bony contact with them. They're fully clothed, the exception being they take off eyeglasses and footwear, leave on socks. I make skeletal contact, and I make a very subtle, gentle, non-corrective inquiry of, is your skeleton willing to move this way or that way? In that process, there is a learning that takes place. And I don't know that that answers your question. That is what I do.
Okay. And do you work on an hourly time or sessions, or do you build medical insurance? How does this all work?
It's not built to medical insurance. It is an elective. A lesson typically is 40 to 45 minutes. That includes some talk time. There's a very specific table on which I work. It's 18 inches off the floor. It's very firm. I sit on a stool. I have my self-use is a critical part of whatever I'm doing. I need to be grounded. I don't sit with my legs crossed like I'm sitting here now. I need to sit more like a sumo. And make clear contact, my contact with the person I'm giving the lesson to, is based on the contact I make with terra firma. Does that begin to address?
Well, I guess so. You have professional offices?
Yes, we do, in Portland, Oregon.
And may I ask, in what kind of general range are fees?
That is not stipulated by the actual guild.
Mm-hmm.
It's an individual thing.
Mm-hmm.
As a practitioner, I actually have a somewhat sliding scale based on people's ability. I do pro bono work,
mm-hmm.
and I also at times bill at $75, $80 for a 40, 45-minute lesson.
Any other questions for the panel? Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 454A. What is the pleasure of the committee? Would you like to work this bill today?
Sure.
Is there any objection?
I won't be supporting it.
Okay. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 454. Are we okay? On Senate Bill 454A.
You want a menu? I mean a motion? Mr. Chair,
motion?
I move Senate Bill 463A. 563A. No. No, wrong one.
454.
Where's my script?
Right here.
454A.
Mr. Chair, if you'll allow me, I move Senate Bill 454A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Greenlich moves Senate Bill 454A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, just my comment. As far as I can understand, this removes protections that the public has by having these people licensed under a license board of the state of Oregon. So.
Any further discussion?
Oh, I guess I'll make a comment. I think my senses are right for many of these people. They don't do what looks like traditional massage therapy. I guess I'm willing to get them out from under the board. I do want Dr. Kenemer to carry this, though.
You don't carry bills, you but I'll be speaking against it on the floor. You can be assured of that.
Representative Doherty.
That's, I think, what it is. I think we're getting, a little more entangled into the other procedures than massage therapy. And those of us that do massages every couple of weeks and so on, we know what massages are and so on. We know that they're licensed. We know if there's any impropriety, we go to the licensure board, and they deal with this. And I think what it is just, it actually, I think, gives the consumer maybe 1 ounce more of prevention, not for massage therapists, because they're all covered, but for the alternative type of whatever you want to call it. I don't have a word for it. Because at least there is some recognition that there is a national board that deals with these other whatever you want to call it. And I think that's what it is. So I'll be voting in favor of it because the people that go in for massages still are protected. There's still consumer protection on this.
Well, I guess I'm kind of where you are. At one time in my life, I was involved with some American Indian practices that are not licensed by any board that I know of that were interesting. I probably wouldn't go there again, but it was a combination of therapy and religious experience, not involving anything hallucinogenic. And I think in terms of those experiences, how would they come under the board system? And they really wouldn't. So maybe the part of the answer is, we shouldn't try to pigeonhole everything into the nearest board, whether it fits or not. Some things just don't fit. And if someone doesn't get anything out of one of these experiences, they can either refuse to pay the bill or not go back for a second try. But it doesn't appear to be harmful. So I think I don't have an objection, strong objection.
Mr. Chair.
I may or may not need to declare a conflict of interest. I have a son-in-law who's a licensee of the Massage Therapy Board. So I don't think I do, but I'll put it on the record.
Representative Widener.
If you want to see the massages, there's tons of videos up online for the Feldenkrais Eli Wadler. Is that the Feldenkrais?
Feldenkrais rhymes with rice.
Yeah, Feldenkrais massages, and I'm watching one happen right now, and
I don't think
anybody's going to get hurt or damaged from this unless they fall off the table, but it's low to the ground, so.
I'm thinking that we,
I think this is going a little further.
We maybe should have divided up and sampled some of the procedures so we understand it better, but since that's not possible, would you please call the roll before we get any farther in the weeds?
Yes.
Yes.
Representative
Boyle?
Excuse.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Kent? Aye. Co-Vice Chair Penner?
No.
Co-Chair Greenlee?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson?
Aye.
We will close the work session on... Oh, we have to...
Sign a carrier.
Who would like to carry this? Okay. Representative Greenlee will be the carrier on this bill. I am waiting for your floor
speech. Would you like me to carry it?
Yes.
Sir? Okay, I'll carry it.
Okay. Representative Doherty, I await your floor speech. And we will close the work session on...
Wait a sec. I thought Representative Parrish was our official massage carrier.
Nope, I'm done with that.
Carrier.
I don't think we want to go there.
That one.
He did
it.
Again, I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 454A. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Where do you want to go?
Yeah, let's do the first one.
Okay.
Okay, moving right along. We don't need any more confusing bills today.
We have a lot. Do you have a lot of? Which one has the most?
They're both about the same.
Both
this
have
one.
A lot. Okay.
Well,
we will open a public hearing now on Senate Bill 141. And Madam Assistant, would you please give us the details?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 141 comes to you from the Senate floor vote with 27 ayes and 3 noes. This removes the statutory exception for speech-language pathologists or audiologists who are employed by a federal agency or approved college or university. It removes the statutory exception for an unlicensed person working within the confines of or under the jurisdiction of an organization for which the person is employed. It does some other technical changes, and we have 3 folks here to speak to the bill as well as the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We could call Sandy Leibold or... Leibold, okay. Genoa Ingram and Lynn Beaton, is it?
Yes.
And please begin by stating your name.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Thompson and Greenlick, members of the committee. My name is Sandy Leibold. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon State Board of Examiners for Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology. Thank you very much for the opportunity to bring this bill before you today. As was mentioned by the committee administrator, this is a kind of an omnibus update of the statute ORS 681, which governs the practice of speech-language pathology and audiology in the state of Oregon. Our board has worked for several months on looking at the different provisions of our statute and really just trying to bring it up to date for current practices, both in the professions as well as in the regulatory environment. Some of the examples of the kinds of technical changes that this involves was, for instance, the entry point now into the profession for an audiologist as of 2007 is actually now a clinical doctorate. That's a national standard. There are no more master's degree programs in audiology operating, granting degrees since 2007. So as an example, we needed to update our statute to reflect that so that anyone trained after 2007 does require a clinical doctorate. People before 2007 would still be licensed based on their master's degree. The written testimony that you have before you includes a number of other technical changes. One does, in fact, eliminate the exemption for speech pathologists and audiologists working in university settings as a blanket statement. One of the other things that we are doing in the proposed changes to the bill is to allow the board to establish qualifications and conditions. The previous language used to say criteria by which an SLP licensed by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission may supervise SLPAs. We have a situation where all along TSPC has also been able to license SLPs who practice solely in the public schools. This proposed bill does not change that, and the purpose of this amendment, for instance, was just to make it very clear that when an SLP who is licensed either by our board or by TSPC is supervising a speech-language pathology assistant, that they would have the same qualifications and do so in the same way. There is also a Dash 1 amendment, and the Dash 1 amendment really just relates to actually that piece that I just mentioned. It turns out that when the original Senate Bill 141 language was drafted by Legislative Council, there was an inadvertent conflict that had been created in the language. So the Dash 1 amendments are really designed to just, again, create a technical fix to bring the language back into conformance with the intent of the original bill. both the professional associations that relate to our professions that we regulate, as well as TSPC, have worked with us and are in support, and they're here to speak to that today. But in the meantime, if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Ms. Ingram.
Co-chairs Thompson and Greenleaf, Genoa Ingram, representing the Oregon Academy of Audiologists. I am here just to confirm that both of the licensing organization, I'm sorry, both of the membership organizations have worked closely and with the development of the bill, and we are completely supportive. We've met with most of you individually, and so I won't belabor the points of the bill. It's already been outlined for you. And I just wanted to point out there is written testimony as well from my colleague, John McCauley, from the Speech, Language, and Hearing Association. He could not be here today, but we both are absolutely in support of the bill on behalf of our respective organizations.
We know which lobbyists are really diligent, the ones that show up on Friday afternoon. It's special.
Yeah, we'll speak to John later. Ms. Beaton.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Beaton, and I am the Director of Licensure for Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. Our Executive Director, Vicki Chamberlain, apologizes for not being able to be here today. Yeah, I know. She's attending the National Summit on Educator Effectiveness back in Washington, D.C. today at the request of Superintendent Castillo. And just for those concerned with budget, please know that the National Teacher Association that's sponsoring that event is paying completely for her way. Wanted to be clear. So I'm here today speaking on her behalf. We are completely supportive of this bill language and have been working very closely with the Board of Examiners to develop the language and to ensure that then we are able to hopefully correctly to implement it as we go forward, working with speech-language pathologists who are licensed within the schools.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee?
Sure, I have a modest question. I thought the summary changed the relationship between federal employees and licensure.
Well, my understanding is that we are removing language in the statute that would explicitly call out that we're removing the exemption that would explicitly state that if you were a federal employee that you would not need a license. But my understanding is that federal law still holds over state law, so that if in fact the federal law allows for such an exemption, of course that would still be the case. But we're just removing it from our statute.
But you are removing the exemption for universities.
Correct.
That's an effective. I assume the
yes.
VA, for example, would still set their own standards. Is that
yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything else? With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 141. And is there any objection to moving to a work session on 141? We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 141.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt Senate Bill 141, is it A or just regular?
Yes, dash one.
Oh, I'm sorry, the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 141, dated 4/27/11.
Chair Greenleg has moved that we adopt the amendment to Senate Bill 141, dated 4/27/11. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is accepted.
Mr. Chair, I move we move Senate Bill 141 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Greenleaf moves that we move Senate Bill 141 with the amendment to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, would our worthy assistant please call the roll?
Representative Doherty?
Yes.
Representative Parrish?
Yes.
Excused.
Representative Whiteman?
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Cannon?
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Cannon?
Aye.
Co-Chair Greenleaf?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Consent calendar?
I move we move this to the consent calendar.
got an objection, right?
We don't need to vote.
No, okay. Is there any objection to putting this on the consent calendar? This bill will move to this consent calendar. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 141. And we will move to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 563A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 563A comes to you from the Senate floor with 30 ayes. The bill allows previously licensed, certified, or otherwise authorized health care providers to register as emergency health care providers and to provide health care services without a license or certification during a governor-declared emergency. There is no revenue on this bill. There are no amendments. There is a fiscal impact statement, but the statement analysis expresses that the bill has minimal fiscal impact on the health authority.
Okay, and we have two people to testify. If you come from the Senate with 30 votes, I would suggest you keep your testimony very short and not do anything to change that. Okay. With that, I'll call.
You got 30 votes, so I'll go for 29.
Mike Harriman and Margaret Steele, please. Dr. Margaret Steele. You go first. And please state your name before you start your testimony.
Co-chairs Thompson and Greenlick and committee, thank you very much for being here on a Friday afternoon with us. I'm Margaret Steele. I'm a retired family physician, having worked at Kaiser for more than 20 years, and I'm currently the director, the volunteer director of the Medical Reserve Corps of Nehalem Bay. I've given you my testimony. I want to just make a really quick statement about the background of this bill, so that it makes sense why we're doing this. Basically, the Medical Reserve Corps is a national organization sponsored by the Office of the Surgeon General, whose mission is to improve the health and safety of communities by organizing and utilizing medical volunteers. However, even though this is a national organization, MRC units are community-based and locally organized, and MRC volunteers are function to supplement existing emergency and public health resources. The Nehalem Bay Medical Reserve Corps was actually officially formed in 2009, and the reason why we were formed is that, if you're familiar with North Tillamook County, the Manzanita, Nehalem, Wheeler area really frequently gets cut off in different kinds of emergencies, even not as big as the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake tsunami, which will happen one of these days. Even in a winter storm such as the one in December of 2007, we were cut off for 5 days. Without electricity, we couldn't go north, we couldn't go south, we couldn't go east. And there is no hospital in North Tillamook County. At that time, I was relatively newly retired in the area. The only medical care available in the area is the Reinhardt Clinic, which is in Wheeler. And there are not a lot of other medical practitioners in the area who aren't employed somewhere else, so who wouldn't, in other words, who wouldn't be off at work in this kind of an emergency. So a number of us, a very small number of us, got together and said, you know, here we are, we're retired, we're still functional, we'd like to be able to help in this situation. So we formed this organization. The problem that we have come up with is that there aren't enough of us to recruit, because in order to register as a medical volunteer in the state of Oregon and to have any sort of protection, you have to be licensed. So the bill basically provides for allowing medical practitioners who have been licensed within the last 10 years but are not currently licensed to register with the State Emergency Registry of Volunteers called CERVOR. And when someone is registered in that capacity, they can then get both liability and workers' compensation protection when they respond to an emergency or a disaster if it's a governor-declared emergency. So what the bill basically does is simply to allow healthcare providers previously licensed to be eligible to register on Servor and to be activated in a governor-declared emergency. Now, when we initially testified in front of the Senate, some questions were raised, and subsequent to that hearing, I participated in a group that was convened by the Oregon Health Authority, which included representatives of various state health care professional boards and other interested parties. And at that meeting, it was a really excellent open discussion kind of meeting. Concerns of all the participants were addressed, and the original bill was amended accordingly, and the bill that was passed, Senate Bill 563A, is the amended bill. And as you heard, it was passed unanimously in the Senate, which we very much appreciated. We in the Nehalem Bay Medical Reserve Corps, as well as our colleagues in the Nehalem Bay Emergency Volunteer Corps, which is a bigger organization that we work with closely, hope that the Oregon House will agree that this change in Oregon law would improve Oregon's ability to respond to emergencies and disasters. Thank you very much. Happy to take any questions.
We have both of them, and then we'll do questions.
Okay.
Please speak.
Co-chairs Greenlick and Thompson, and members of the committee. I'm Mike Kerriman, the manager of the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Program for Public Health Division, Oregon Health Authority, and I'm here today to provide information on Senate Bill 563A, which allows previously licensed healthcare providers who no longer have licensure or certification to provide services during the governor's declared emergency. I just want to make the highlight, as Dr. Steele said, the key working groups were the Oregon Emergency Management, Medical Society of Metropolitan Portland, State EMS, Oregon Board of Nursing, Oregon Medical Association, Oregon Medical Board, Board of Dentistry, Oregon Board of Pharmacy, Medical Reserve Corps, Department of Justice, and the Oregon Nurses Association. And lastly, it's in my notes, or my testimony is, as the preparedness program, we already have the registry that Dr. Steele mentioned. It's the State Emergency Registry for Volunteers in Oregon, or we call it Servor. Last session, House Bill 3021 helped kickstart our registry, and today we have 1,240 pre-volunteer registered folks. We see this as a great bill to increase that capacity to not only strengthen our capability, but also to our neighboring states if the need ever arises. And with that, I'll just take any questions that you may have for either myself or Dr. Steele.
Ed Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You made the fatal mistake of talking too long because I got to reading and looking into things here. So, last session in a different committee, it was Veterans and Emergency Services. We passed a bill. Looks like it does similar to what we're looking at doing here, but it limited the liability of anybody in an emergency or an event if they were helping somebody or moving somebody that was hurt or in an accident or anything like that. And I'm just wondering what the difference of the two are, because here we're dealing with tort claims and stuff, and we basically removed all liability from them from helping somebody. So I'm just wondering if we're duplicating something that we've done 2 years ago.
Do you want to answer that?
Co-Chair Green, Lincoln Thompson, Representative Widener. Our Department of Justice folks who worked on that exact same bill, 3021 last session, were the same folks who worked on this. We have to have a governor's declared emergency, and they become non-paid state employees if we activate the Servor system and give them a mission to either enhance the Nehalem Bay or some other part of the state. So the current liability laws that were addressed then are still in place, and this bill does not supersede it or change those.
That bill is cool. People with a current license.
Current license, yes.
That's the difference. I was going to say. The difference.
After a current license.
That's correct. This broadens that to include allowing people who have been licensed within the last 10 years but are no longer licensed to also sign up on the registry, Servor, and get the same protections that House Bill 3021 gave. So the difference is licensed versus no longer licensed.
Representative Parrish.
Okay, thank you. I guess the question I have, and I don't see it in here, is that if there was truly something worthy of declaring an emergency, we've got earthquakes or whatever, and you've got people who aren't registered to, because as I'm reading this, you got to be registered to not have the license, but to be able to be used. And I guess the question I have is, you know, I've taken a variety of classes on different health subjects, athletic training. I can tape somebody's ankle and do stuff, but I've certainly never had a license to do any of those things. If we're truly in a state of emergency, I'm probably going to just jump in there and do. Why do we need to register folks? I mean, I guess it's just it's an honest question to ask.
The
for me.
I think
there on the sidewalk if you did not like my me to tape your ankle, Mitch.
All right, I'll take it.
I think I can answer that. There's a couple ways to answer that. One is in a great big huge emergency, if you know how to do something and we believe that you do, then you're going to be doing it. That's the non-legalistic, obvious statement. But since we have a registry and since we have a setup and since we all want to play, most of us want to play by the rules, we'd like the rules to be written in such a way that people who have usable skills are officially allowed to do what they're allowed to do, what they can do. I think, does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
It does. I'd like to follow
please
up. I guess the question I have, because we had a kind of a debate on the House floor this week about kind of this very similar same topic, you know, how do you govern if, you know, the building collapses and we can't get here, and who's going to check? I mean, if the city of Portland's like under a bunch of concrete, who's going to check if I've registered or not? I guess that would be.
I think nobody's going to check at the moment. I think that a lot of this is cover your behind kind of stuff too. I mean, if somebody in a huge event, nobody's going to check. But if somebody decides to come back later and sue you, that kind of thing. I mean, I think that's part of it. One would hope that we would all pull together in these kinds of events, and even but in a smaller event like the bad December storms in 2007, which I believe ultimately did rise to a governor declared emergency, we in the Nehalem Bay area could have had, I don't remember if we did, but we could have had, for example, warming shelters set up, and I could have gone there. And if somebody needed some medical assistance, I could have helped them. Whereas in the most recent event, in the tsunami that didn't really hit our area very hard, we did have a warming shelter set up. We were open for 5 hours. 100 people came through. I was there not doing anything medical because, in fact, it wasn't a governor-declared emergency, and so I really wasn't covered, which is a problem which we're going to have to address maybe next year. But right now, so there are times that fall short of the enormous event where we still need to have the availability of, if possible, of medical volunteers to help the community.
Okay. Any further questions? Just, I'm a huge supporter of these programs. I worked for a previous employer on Hurricane Katrina moving medical supplies into that area. I would have killed for 3 or 4 retired pharmacists to receive material. Because you've got a truckload of supplies, you have to have somebody who at least claims to have qualifications to be able to accept and distribute these materials within a system. Your system is the important part, and then having these people tied to it. So I think it's a great, great opportunity. And if there's nothing else, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 563A. And if there's no objection, we'll quickly open a work session. Open a work session on Senate Bill 563A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 563A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Greenlick has moved Senate Bill 563A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Will you please call the roll?
Representative Norty?
Yes.
Representative
Parrish?
Yes.
Representative Boyle?
Excuse.
Representative Whitener?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Hammer?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Hammer?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Thompson? Aye. And how about having Representative Boone carry this?
I think that'd be great.
Yeah, let's ask Representative Boone to carry this, and we'll back up a plan if that doesn't work. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 563A. And if there isn't any, if there's anybody left to adjourn, we will hereby adjourn the House Health Care Committee for
Friday, April 29th, 2011.
She has a meeting tomorrow.